Welcome to Gay Geek Bizarre Show, episode 38, and it's Tuesday, February 14th.
Are you sure about that?
It's real this time, because for the past episodes, we've been screwing up with the numbers, and this time is really real.
This is really, truly episode 38.
This is episode 38, that's right. So welcome, everyone. I am Nard.
And I am Ray, and we want to wish y'all all a happy National Single Awareness Day.
Yay! Singles, happy Single Awareness Day for all those people who are not parted right now, because for the longest time, Valentine's Day has always been about people who have partners. But this time, we want to give tribute to those who do not have
partners. For all the ones sitting home having cocktails by themselves tonight and eating chocolate.
Yeah, or playing with themselves.
Or all the ones that will be going to Walgreens tomorrow to buy the half-price chocolate.
That's right. Tomorrow's the best time for that. Okay, Ray, so what's been going on with you?
Well, we have to say goodbye to Richard Hatch, who was Apollo on the original Battlestar Galactica. He was 71 years old this week when he died.
So he was in the original Battlestar Galactica?
Yeah, he was the original Apollo.
And then in the later one, the more recent series of Battlestar Galactica, he was one of the...
he was a political figure.
Political figure there. Which is very influential for some reason. But I remember him even from the original one, Richard Hatch.
Yeah.
Not to be confused with the bear in Survivor.
Not same Richard Hatch. Two different.
Yeah, that's right.
Two Richard Hatches.
Yeah, different Richard Hatch. So yeah, so condolences to his family and friends. And we are sorry to hear that Battlestar Galactica actor Richard Hatch passed, and he died at age 71. Okay, let's go to our weekend updates. Ray, what have you been doing?
Well, Saturday, I went out bar hopping, and we have a Hamburger Mary's that has opened here in Houston.
You know, I wanted to go with you guys, just that it was just an awkward evening. You guys were out at 8:30. You wanted to go out at 8:30, but...
Well, some people I live with have to eat by 7:30.
That's right.
It's a requirement.
It's a requirement that you have to
eat. It's the blue plate special when you live here.
That's right. But you know, but that's the point also. Some people have these diet regimen where they have to eat no food intake after 6 p.m. It's part of their diet. So some people are like that.
It's a lot of things. I get that. It's better to eat on a regular schedule because your body gets digest better and do all that good stuff.
So. That's right.
But we went to Hamburger Mary's. I posted a review on Facebook. And somebody said I was being whiny.
Why? What did you say?
Well, I was supposed to. If you live here in Houston, you understand. Restaurants either make it or break it pretty soon here in Houston. If you're a half-assed restaurant, you don't last long in Houston because there's so much competition between the moms and pops.
That's true. Yeah.
This is outside, a chain. When you get close into Houston around the 610 loop, it's a lot of mom and pop restaurants.
That's true.
Now, further out, you start getting the cookie cutters that have all the same restaurants in every mall. Mm-hmm. But closer in, there's all these mom and pop restaurants, small chains that are here, specifically here in Texas or Houston area. And Hamburger Mary's is a hamburger joint.
Yeah. And that's one in Dallas. Is it still open? I don't know. Is it not?
I don't know.
It's in Cedar Springs.
Yeah, but the whole deal was it's a hamburger joint. And the hamburger patty that they served us tasted like a Sisco hamburger patty.
So is that like Costco is better?
Well, no, that's the industrial service that most food places get their hamburgers from if they just buy them already made. And I know what they taste like because we've used a bunch of them for
Bear Watch.
Mm-hmm. And I was just like the consistency of the meat and stuff. And I was like, look, guys, and I was just being positive. I was like, look, if you're going to keep this restaurant open, one, you're serving gays hamburgers. So
and gays are judgmental.
Well, it's not that judgmental, but a lot of them are weight conscious and stuff. I mean, when we went there, there's a bunch of bears.
Oh, really?
So there's an audience that'll eat that. And if you want to keep people coming back, then you got to have more than a novelty that we have drag queens here and drag shows while you eat dinner every now and then. Is that what they have?
They have drag queens that evening, right?
Well, at certain times, they have a show scheduled. They have a Sunday brunch and stuff. And they just did a soft opening this week, and it wasn't their full menu. But I mean, we got places like Miller's and Hubcap Grill
and Barnaby's
and Barnaby. Well, Barnaby's not big of a Barnaby's hamburgers are pretty good.
Yeah, they do. Yeah.
But all those are fresh ground hamburger meat. They're not some pre-made patty frozen that you get in off a truck.
Yeah.
If you're going to compete selling people $12, $13, $14, $15 hamburgers, you got to bring the level of quality up to get that.
You have to have handmade burgers.
You have to have handmade fresh ground hamburger meat. And that's all I was saying. And I was just like, look, guys, I'm giving you a thing. If you want this to last, you got to have the food to bring the people in there and keep them.
Yeah.
Because if you're doing mediocre, and they didn't even have the full menu. It was just like you had some appetizers, and the appetizers were good. They had some chicken wings. We got plain chicken wings with no coating on them.
Mm-hmm.
And then we got fried pickles, you know, all very easy staples and stuff. And they were good. But the burgers, I was just like, I felt let down. Because I had the Mac Daddy, which had macaroni and cheese and a couple different types of cheeses melted on it.
Oh, it's so awesome.
And it was awesome. And it was good. It was just like, you know, I was expecting more for a $12 hamburger. Because for the half that price, or for what I paid for that meal, I could go to Five Guys and get the same thing. And Five Guys would taste better.
Five Guys would probably be better.
Well, it would taste
better.
I do
like Five Guys.
Yeah. So, I mean, you got to think about who your competition is.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that Houston people are flaky when it comes to food. If the food's not good, they don't come back. I mean, they'll give you a couple chances, but after that, you know.
So since it's a soft opening, is it going to be like fully opened in a couple of weeks or something?
Yeah,
or?
They're going to probably have a grand opening and everything and stuff. But I mean, it was a nice setup area. I mean, the staff was all cute little Twinkie boys, and I'm not saying there's a bad thing. I'm just saying, look, if you're going to keep customers, you got to have good food.
Yeah, I mean that's pretty much.
If you come with cheap food, and I got a margarita, and the margarita was kind of weak.
Oh, really?
And since the same people that own the Eagle, they should know how to tell the bartender to make a drink.
Their bartenders are from the Eagle?
No, the people that own the Eagle own Hamburger Mary's.
Oh, okay. Well, that's a different set of staff. So you really get
Well, out. You're serving gays.
You're serving gays.
And all the gays are used to heavy poured liquors in the bars here. Is there a bar in Houston that's gay that does not pour heavy?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right. Sometimes there's a dash of Diet Coke in there.
Yeah.
A dash of Coke.
So I'm just saying. So it was just all constructive criticism. I wasn't like trying to be bitchy or anything. And then you had to pay $10 to park to go in and eat.
So you had to carpool or something or park somewhere really far.
Then walk over there. So, yeah. But if you park in front where there was parking places, you had to pay $10. And we just stayed parked there all night. So which we asked the guy and we got out and said, look, we're paying $10. We're staying here. This car's staying here until we get ready to go home. And he's like, that's fine with me.
Yeah. You paid your pen that $10.
So I was like, okay.
Yeah. That's exciting. Well, my weekend is really just a weekend of softball and everything. But you know what's really pisses me off? If you have your own place and somebody else takes over, that's kind of shitty. You know how it feels like if, like Batman, that you have your own Batcave. And you find out that later on somebody else is using your bat cave. That's how pretty much I felt last weekend for our softball field. Because we found this small field, very nice field for a softball, you know, softball field for a school that only we have been using for many months. And then all of a sudden, this other softball team, it's another gay softball team, took over that weekend where we were scheduled to go into. So it's kind of pissed me off because this is our bat cave, you know, so... You know,
who scheduled them there?
I don't know. They just showed up and used our field. It's the field that we've been using for months. And
well, somebody showed up there and cut them a new one. Did y'all say, look, we're paying to use this field. It's scheduled to us. Get the hell out.
I know. So we should.
Don't make me use this bat on you, bitch.
I should have. But they also have bats. But they're.
Hit first.
Then you run that.
And run like hell.
But anyway, so it's
if
okay.
You run that if you hit like that and run like that, y'all win a lot more games. I'm saying.
Because that was my word for that weekend. This is our bat cave and somebody's taking over. So this is bullshit. So anyway, we played at the soccer field instead.
I'd have walked out there and said, y'all need to go. This is our practice field.
Yeah, we don't even know how that, because we didn't know the deal, because they may have asked permission for somebody else who also has access to that field. So there may have been a miscommunication.
They should have got on the phone and called the person and got it communicated to y'all.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Next time we'll.
Don't be pussies.
We will be correct.
Be lesbians.
Oh, we have some lesbians. They can really pull some
strings. Well, you should have got them out there and put them in full motorboat.
That's right. Okay, so anything else that I've been doing? I've been watching Weeds. You finished Weeds already, didn't you?
I think I got up to season 4.
Oh, really? There are 8 seasons. I'm on season 4 right now. Okay. And, oh my God, 8 seasons. They're really good. Really funny, too. It's something intriguing that, you know, about a MILF. It's like a MILF walking
Snoop Dogg
around.
Wants that MILF, baby.
Yeah, MILF weed.
Snoop Dogg!
That's right. Anyway, so that's what I've been doing the whole weekend. I just really softball and watching Weeds. And right now, I'm working up on Moonlight. I wanted to watch. I'm in the middle of watching Moonlight.
I watched it originally.
So Moonlight, you're talking about the one that is going going to be in the Oscars, right? Moonlight.
No, I'm talking about Moonlight, the TV show that.
That's
Bruce
Moonlighting.
Oh, Moonlighting. Okay.
That's Moonlighting, which I know about that too. Okay. That's available also on Roku on Cody.
Me and Julio are supposed to be going to sit down one rainy Sunday and go watch all the Oscar movies.
Oh, you guys going to?
Because they got a deal here in Houston. You can pay $35 and see all 6 movies that are nominated.
Wait, the documentaries or just the?
Just the movies.
Oh, the movies. This coming
Somebody
week.
Else was doing a documentary thing where you could go watch all the documentaries.
Yeah, that's with Paul and Young. We're going to do that on Sunday. Uh-huh. So that's only $9. A lot cheaper. But that's just the documentaries that are going to be nominated, that are nominated for the Oscars. But you guys are going to have a better deal. You know, you guys are going to watch the movies that are going out. So, anyway. So
speaking of movies, I went and watched 50 Shades Darker this weekend.
And how do you like it?
It was good. I mean,
I like the book.
Well, the first one, there's a lot that goes on in the first book, and it's hard to translate that into a 2-hour movie. So they kind of rushed through some stuff.
So how about this one?
This one's a little bit better organized, but the book was a little bit better organized and stuff. And they still have to push stuff along to get it all to happen in that 2-hour format. So,
yeah.
I mean, it's not like they can do like a regular TV series or ongoing series of stuff that's drag it out like they do other stories and stuff because it's a movie. It's not TV. So.
Okay. One of these days I'm going to watch it. How do you compare it with the first one? Is it better than the first one?
I like the first one.
Okay.
I mean, it's BDSM romance novel. I mean, that's all it is for straight people. But I just like the whole way they develop, the way that she wrote the characters and how they come around. And
is it the same guy?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Is it the same girl? Different girl?
Oh, yeah, Dakota Johnson. Ain't that her name?
Okay. Yeah. All right. So probably we'll watch it.
And Jamie, what's his name? Dorian? Jamie Dorian?
Probably just watch it when it comes to cable or something. All right. So, Ray, shall we go to our stories for the week?
Okay.
These are all posted on facebook.com/gaygeekbizarre, everyone. So if you guys want to catch along, then we pick the ones that we can like or the ones that are popularly liked on the Facebook page.
Yep. So, Maynard, out of the percentage of Americans, how many do you think's gay?
25%. Too high?
I think that's too high.
It's too high. 5%.
Maybe, so. Okay. But this article is, what percentage of Americans are gay? Is it wildly different than what you've heard? The long-established wisdom that 10% of the American public is gay or lesbian.
10% only?
Well, that's what I always heard it was, 10%. But when asked, the majority of American estimates that almost 25% of their fellow citizens are homosexual to one extent or another.
I am right. I just guessed it. 25%.
You're never right, Maynard. Just get used to it. And here's the catch. Both of those numbers may be wildly off.
Like plus or minus 20?
According to the majority of recent well-regarded surveys, less than 5% of the responders identified themselves as gay or lesbian or anything other than straight. So that would include bisexual. According to UCLA's Williams Institute, just 3.8% of the total U.S. population identifies as gay or lesbian. The National Center for Health Statistics clocks it at 3.4, as did a Gallup poll earlier in this decade. Pew Research puts it at 4.6%. The General Social Survey has 4.3%, and the National Election Pool came up with 5%. There are outliers, of course. The Public Religion Research Institute concluded that 7% of all Americans polled self-identified as gay, lesbian, or bisexual. And the National Survey of Sexual Health and Behavior found that 8% of respondents fell under the same banner. Yet even the more generous estimates fall well below the expectations of most Americans. What gives? What gives a complex stew of factors that complicate the popular understanding of how many gay, lesbian, bi, or queer Americans there actually are? First off, with every successive generation, gay and lesbian people become less afraid to express their identities in public, as even a growing number of Republicans come out.
Yep.
This helps create the impression that there's an increasing number of them, when really it's just that straight people are noticing them more. Also, there's the very visual tendency of millennials to openly experiment and question their own sexuality.
I knew a few.
Those damn millennials. Millennials are always fucking shit up. When it comes to public
representation,
gay and lesbian individuals are more prevalent in the metropolitan centers, which has always been true, that control the majority of the capital in this country. The media industry that creates content designed to reach buyers in those areas, and the very content that the industry creates. An ongoing focus on gay and lesbian rights coming from both the left and the right continues to push issues relevant to that community onto America's front pages. There are also historical issues. The famous 10% figure not only comes from pioneering sexologist Alfred Kinsey's misunderstanding of what it is to be gay lesbian, but the strategic choice to offer a number that is big enough to matter, but not so large as to overly threaten society still extremely uncomfortable with the idea of gay people. Finally, and perhaps most importantly, there's this. According to Gallup, 78% of Americans know someone who's openly gay or lesbian themselves, be it a friend, co-worker, or family member. That closeness, along with all the other factors above, give gay and lesbian individuals an outsized appearance in American culture. Whatever the actual percentage of gay and lesbian people in the U.S., it's clear that they became more of a mainstay in politics and culture, and the majority of Americans support that. According to Pew, 63% of all Americans say that the homosexual lifestyle is morally acceptable, up from 50% 10 years ago.
Okay, so according to this article, it looks like it does range from, you know, from 3% to 10%. That's pretty much your plus or minus range.
And, you know,
there.
I think it's going to be hard to, because when you're doing like these polls, you're calling somebody at their house and asking them a question. How many people answer that phone?
That's true, but then there's also the census
or
gays
like
or actually,
and that's probably more of an accurate when since people actually fill those out. But then it all depends: are you a gay head of household?
You're a gay head of household. Well, there's also one way of also testing is that you have 1,000 individuals and you actually poll them.
Yeah.
And so there is more like of a
but the whole thing
like
about
sample.
That like some people come out at an early age, they realize it, you know, that they're gay from the beginning. Yeah. And then some people like 30 or 40 years of button collections like, oh my God, I'm really gay.
Well, it's more like they're coming out, they're becoming more courageous. So that's what
not as much courageous. Some people I've known been married and had never had sex with a man and stuff, and then all of a sudden they're like, oh my God, I'm really gay.
Really?
Yeah.
You know, some people like that. I what I've heard of that incident, that they've always been gay. It's just that they still have sex with women and everything.
Well,
they have
I've
children,
heard of those too, but
and then when they're done with that, they've finished their relationship with them, and then.
But I've had conversations with people that were in their 30s and 40s and 50s, and they said, you know, I was straight. I got married. I had kids. My wife died, and then I started realizing that I'm really attracted to men.
And they start fucking them, yeah.
Yeah. So,
yeah, but the looks of it is 3% to 10%. I'm thinking that because of more acceptance in the society these days and more popularity of the gays that the people see in the mainstream media that you have people that the percentage is becoming higher and higher. Not because it is becoming higher; it's just that it's not being reported. It's not readily or even.
Well, I think you also got to look. I think a majority of gay and lesbians migrate towards bigger cities or
that's
social
one too.
Areas.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure there are plenty out in BFE too. But a majority of people leave that rural lifestyle and come in to a city like Houston. Well, like the two big gay cities used to be New York and San Francisco. Mm-hmm. And everywhere else, it was a subculture.
Yeah, that's true.
Where San Francisco, New York, it was pretty open there for a long time. Mm-hmm. And now you get all the cities like Houston and Dallas and Atlanta that have all these gay cultures that are finally come up and speaking and coming out, and people aren't afraid of being gay anymore and taking notice and stuff.
So in that case, that means that's possibly a factor why the numbers do go up, because they are now being more visible.
Yes.
And they're even expressing it more. So they are being counted now. That thus, that 3% range is not becoming wrong. Goes up.
Plus, a lot, like they said, a lot of the media is putting more gay content on TV or gay characters on TV.
Well, yeah, that's true. But then,
so people are seeing it and like, okay, this is okay.
That means if they see,
except for the ones that are like right wing and said no, you're all gonna burn it.
So when they see gay people on screen, people become more courageous to be out.
Yeah,
and thus,
and like a lot of younger people, from what I understand, like at least in the city population, I'm sure there are some areas that are not, but a lot of people are more open. From what I've seen, are the younger or the millennials that are more open to having gay friends and being gay and you know whatever. So it's just okay. That's whatever they are.
Yeah, the younger they are, they're coming out even easier. All right. So what do you guys think? That's an interesting article.
How many gays do you think there really are out there?
Yeah, let us know. Okay, let's go to the geek. How do you feel, Ray, about drone taxis? It's like Uber for a taxi.
Well, let's get Amazon to deliver by drones first and get that working, and then we're worried about
something small.
Yeah.
You want packages to be delivered, but not necessarily people being delivered.
I'll be sitting here and order my lube and have it delivered within an hour.
I would prefer that too. But then in Dubai, plans roll out of self-flying pods. That's what we're trying to do right now. This is an article posted by Caesar on Gay Geek Bizarre Facebook. So there's been lots of talks in recent years about self-driving cars. Now it appears as if self-flying passengers drones are next, and they could be flying in one major city as soon as this July. I don't know if this is even feasible. So that's according to a plan revealed Monday in Dubai, where the head of the Dubai Roads and Transportation Authority said it wants to develop passenger carrying drones as a way to move people around the United Arab Emirates' biggest city. Officials said flights could begin in July, though few other details were offered. So the Associated Press reports the drone type being pursued for Dubai's passenger service is the Chinese-made Yihang 184, an egg-shaped craft with four legs sticking out with two small propellers. I don't think it's even beautiful to look at.
Well, I've seen some that had smaller propellers, but they were like multiple propellers around one.
Oh, two here. Small propellers.
Yeah, but here, but I think in the U.S., I saw a video where they were testing them here in the U.S., but they might have had like six propellers, smaller propellers.
Probably four or something like that. So how would it work? A rider would add a destination and a touch of a screen in front of the passenger seat. From there, the drone would lift off and automatically fly to the passenger's destination. So AP says the Yihang 184 drone has a battery life that allows for 30 minutes of flying and could cover about 30 miles. The drones can handle a flyer and a small bag, shopping, weighing up to a combined total of 220 pounds. So Ray, can it handle you?
No, it cannot handle me.
Okay, 220 pounds, it can handle me. I'm lower than 220. So the Roads and Transportation Authority says the drones would be monitored remotely from a ground-based control room. There is no option to take control of the Yihang 184 remotely, adds the Daily Mail of London. The cockpit is empty, apart from a stand to place a smartphone or tablet in the cup holder.
Gotta have your Starbucks.
Yeah, or your Starbucks. George Yan, can't cook. Co-founder of Yihang spoke to the Daily Mail in 2016 after the 184 was unveiled in Las Vegas. They think they did this in CES, I think. So, you know how it feels to sit in a Ferrari? This is 10 times better. I seriously doubt that.
I don't know about that now. Come on.
Everything is calculated in the back end to pick the most optimal route for you.
Now, if they get it so they can fly from Houston to Dallas in less than an hour, I'd be like down. Yeah. You're like, okay, we can be calling it a Ferrari then.
I don't know about it. Yeah, probably. Yeah.
Ferrari would probably come out with their own drones. That's going to be the next thing. Okay, car companies making their own drones.
Yeah, and probably just one of the future progressions of their business. So everything is calculated in the back end to pick the most optimal route for you. So there is no collision with other flying drones. Yan added to the newspaper. On the drone itself, we have built pretty sophisticated backup services. So if another system fails, then another will take over. I prefer something glides, because that's a good backup.
You're in a helicopter, it doesn't glide. It goes bam, and you hit the ground.
Yeah, so that's the bad part about it. So Dubai's plan for the EHang 184 were unveiled during the World Government Summit being held there. This is not only a model. Matar Al-Tayer, head of Dubai's Roads and Transportation Authority, told AP, "We have actually experimented with this vehicle flying in Dubai's skies." They already have prototypes and using it already. I'm interested. It's good that they do it. So it would probably drive other cities to develop something as good or even better.
My question is, if they only last 30 minutes, how long does it take to recharge and be able to reuse them? I mean, that's a lot of drones sitting around recharging to get people around.
If you have 30 of them in one place.
And then what's the cost? I mean, the reason they might be doing here is because people here in Dubai can afford to pay high exorbitant costs for taxes.
Well, yeah, they can do that because they're Dubai. It's Dubai. They're pretty rich about that. So they can do that. Okay, so what would you ride one, Ray? Here in Houston, if it's available right there in front of you, you pay let's say $80. $80 to ride from here to there, because would you do it?
It all depends.
On
what's here to there.
Oh, to go to work?
$80? No, because I don't make that kind of money.
Well, do it once. It's not every day. It's got to be once that you want to do, just to try it out. I mean, would you even try it out?
I mean, I might try it out.
From here to Galleria. From here to Galveston.
Maybe from here to Galveston. I mean, that might be doable. But that's what I said. You know, I want to be able to do from here to Dallas or here to San Antonio.
Okay. But, you know, okay, since it is a very, very ambitious, to me, it's very ambitious for Dubai to actually say something that they have a drone right now and it'll be available in July.
Yeah.
That's four
very
months
ambitious.
From now.
Yeah.
Very ambitious, because these self-driving cars and everything are still set out to go out until 2020. And they want this is a self-driving vehicle that they would transfer from one place to another, and probably for...
But you also got to look, how is Dubai built? Is it built more so it's easier to dispatch drones in Dubai? And most of the buildings have helipads.
Well, that's the point. It's very small. That they just need a parking lot.
Yeah, but most of the buildings there have helipads, so you can go.
But if you have helipads like that, helipads. Are you talking about helipads that are on top of a building or on the ground? Because these are from ground to ground.
Well, not necessarily. I think if they're.
I think it's on the ground. It goes up and then it goes across and then goes down.
I think it's about the layout of the city and how it would work. I don't know if this could work in New York City, maybe.
Oh, probably not. Not in New York. But I would imagine in a city like Dubai, probably. I would probably wait for the second generation.
Yeah.
Because I would prefer it to be to be tested. It might sound bad, but wait for others to die first. Until they perfect the technology. Generation 2 would be great, then I would probably do it. Yeah. And it's probably a lot more cheaper, like half the price. Okay, so how about you guys? So everybody listening, would you be riding? Would you like to go to Dubai and try out these drones that you can ride on? They're like small helicopters. It would be nice. Okay, Ray, what do you have? What's your next story?
All right, on to the bazaar. And this is a final obit.
Obituary. It's an obituary.
Obituary. A final obit of a man who lived a very hard, rough life. Evil man's family gives him the obit he deserved. There's a widespread misconception that everyone who dies is entitled to a flattering postmortem, that their lives must necessarily be cast in a stage-ready glow that buffs away negatives and politely misremembers bad people as good. Don't speak ill of the dead, our grandmothers chide, but what if the dead deserve it? Leslie Ray Charping passed away in Galveston, Texas last month at the age of 74.
He's just a few miles from here.
Yep. Succumbing finally to years-long battle with cancer. According to the obituary written by his family, which received so much attention that it crashed the Carnes Funeral Home website, Charping was a father, husband, and enormous dick.
He doesn't have an anymore. He doesn't have a big dick, but he's just really a big dick.
He was a big dick.
He was a dick.
Yeah. Leslie's life served no other purpose. He did not contribute to society or serve his community, and he possessed no redeeming qualities besides quick wit, sick sarcasm, which was amusing during his sober days. It reads, with Leslie's passing, he will be missed only for what he never did, being a loving husband, father, and good friend. Fair enough. The Houston Chronicle reports that... Sorry, I went too far on my scroll. The Houston Chronicle reports that Charping was convicted of a raft of ugly offenses over the years, including the assault in 1979 and another in 2008, he poured hot liquid on his wife. In 2009, he violated a restraining order when he threatened to kill a female relative. The obit goes on. At a young age, Leslie quickly became a model example of bad parenting combined with mental illness and a complete commitment to drinking, drugs, womanizing, and being generally offensive. He leaves behind two relieved children.
Relieved.
A son, Leslie Roy Charping, and daughter, Sheila Smith, along with six grandchildren and countless other victims, including an ex-wife, relatives, friends, neighbors, doctors, nurses, and random strangers. His family adds that they have no intention of holding a funeral. Instead, they wrote they plan to have him cremated, with his remains kept in their barn until the donkey's wood shavings run out. Leslie's passing provides that evil does, in fact, die, the obituary said. And only hopefully marks a time of healing and safety for all. Congratulations to Leslie's family for their loss. And then there was an update. An initial version of this post failed to include the response from Leslie's daughter sent to Eyewitness News. Here it is. I wrote my father's obituary. I love my father because he was my father, and his passing would not have been any less difficult had he been a good father. As someone that hated a liar, I believe he would have appreciated the honesty. I'll apologize to anyone that my father hurt and I felt would have been offensive to portray him as anything other than who he was. This obituary was intended to help bring closure because not talking about domestic violence doesn't make it go away. Excuse me. Thank you for those that have offered sincere condolences, understanding, and prayers for our family. Your words bring comfort. I am happy for those that simply do not understand. This means you've had good parents. Please treasure what you have. Although I appreciate everyone's concern, it would have been much more appreciated at any time during my childhood. For those being cruel, please remember that you now resemble my father, and I would be more than happy to pin your obituary as well.
Okay, so by the looks of this, that what they're talking about in the beginning of the article is that the usual obituary for people would be goody two shoes, and it's all praise for the person and everything.
All praise, did good, you know. Okay.
So they did talk shit about the guy that he's a big dick and everything. However, it went back to this update, which is not necessarily in the obituary, but it's really more of a to Houston Chronicle, I guess, that you had to back down and make it a little bit happier, make it a little bit more positive, which I understand. I mean,
what are you talking about?
That update.
No, the update's just her saying, I don't apologize for doing what I did because that's the truth.
Yeah. What I'm saying is that change the obituary.
Yeah.
But for the news sake, her update here is more positive now, saying that as someone that thank you for those that offered sincere condolences, understanding prayers. She tried to make it more positive in the end, although at the same time, leaving the obituary saying, you know, bad things about.
Said, we're glad he's gone, pretty much.
Yeah. I mean, essentially, the last statement of that article is congratulations for the family's loss. So they accept it, they do it, but it's just that, you know, they kind of backtrack. I felt like the update that they did for the Chronicle was more of a, they backtracked a little bit on it. But I understand.
Some people are just evil.
And yeah,
no matter
true.
What you do or how nice you are or how good you try to treat them, they're just evil. I work with such a person.
I was about to say.
And I was talking to one of my coworkers today about this article, and she said, oh, my God, we should write
the obituary now for him.
we should write Satan's obituary. And I said, oh, it would be much worse than this.
Yeah.
So
I don't know. It's just how could anyone be, you know, It's hard to find people or even situations like this that people are really people who are dying or probably who died would actually say something bad about these people. Maybe not through an obituary. Probably during the wake. They could probably say something shitty about the guy. But when it comes to obituary, it's something that is more permanent. Probably in the written.
Been others like this where people have been honest about the person, and they said, and y'all, and everybody that knew XYZ knows that he was an ass.
Yeah, they do that usually in eulogies.
Yeah. Well, no, there have been other bits like this because this is not the first obit story that popped up like this. So.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right, Ray. So what do we have next?
We got fan mail. Yay! We got fan mail. Thank God, finally.
God, I can't believe you have fan mail.
We got fan mail.
It took 30 episodes.
Yes. This is Chris from New Jersey. Hi, Nard and Ray. In episode 27, are you sure it was episode 27? You mentioned in passing that shout-outs don't matter because nobody listens. You're probably just joking, but don't despair. I'm sure there are plenty of people listening, even if we don't have a lot of feedback. Glad to know that Bear Podcast wasn't the end of your efforts. Keep on keeping on. Chris in New Jersey.
Oh, thank you, Chris. See, we do have listeners, so keep going. Thank you, Chris. Thank you, Chris. And then we'll talk shit about him. No, I'm kidding. Yeah. No. I didn't remember him from Bear Podcast. Maybe he emailed us once before on when we were doing Bear Podcast.
Maybe. I don't know. That's all a blur. That's so long ago.
It's so long ago. Okay, so thank you, everyone, for listening and joining us in this show. If you want to... but before we go, we have special thanks to Caesar for the great articles on the Facebook page. That's facebook.com/gaygeekbizarre. If you want to email us, send your emails to show@gaygeekbizarre.com.
Or you can call and leave us a voicemail at 281-947-2327. That's 281-947-2327. You can follow us on Facebook and Twitter. We're on Google Play, iTunes, and Stitcher Radio.
Yes. And, it would be great if we get a voicemail from Chris next time on that phone number we just said. And also go to the official website at gaygeekbizarre.com. Thank you, everyone, for listening. And we will catch you guys on the next show. Bye.